And so the fact that this thing turns that on its head and it says, no, the future can actually be way better than you could ever even imagine. And now the only thing that determines how great it is for you is you. And now your behavior and how you refine yourself or how you make yourself more fit to capitalize on that is all that matters, because it's, you know, it's there now and it's waiting for you.
Hi there, everyone. I'm John Schnow, and welcome to episode 10 of the Bitcoin Path podcast. This is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. In this episode, I'm excited to share with you session number 2 of the Cosmic Deep Dive online event, led by John Vallis. This was an interactive online event that took place on December 12th and the 13th of 2020, and it was 2 full days of back-to-back immersive Bitcoin educational webinars with some of the leading educators in the space. We had tremendous feedback from everyone who attended, so keep an eye out for more events like this coming up at thebitcoinpath.com. And with that, let's get into this session with John Vallis.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said during that call, I totally respect that. But I, to your point, I think you could easily sum it up by just saying it's a lot. If we show our true colors, because like I'm constantly impressed by the people that come into this space and that do, you know, reveal themselves or whatever. And there's a lot of good people around. And I feel like the more we show our true colors, it's going to be way harder to, you know, make it appear as though we're something we're not when the time comes that, you know, motivated parties wish to do that. You know, so I think that that is part of the defense here, is that, you know, when we are demonized, I think it's going to be difficult to demonize us as individuals because of the manner in which we're engaging and what we're saying and what our intentions are in being here. And like, I know everybody's a little bit different, and we'll get into that in the talk today. But I do think that's an important aspect of pushing back against the forces that would seek to constrain this as we move forward.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's not even my not even the choices we make, because it's the thing that Bitcoin does to you, right? It inspires you to make this change in yourself, right? So I would consider myself the most the calmest of the bunch, right? So the one who would never ever even understand the concept of revolutionary thoughts, right? Why there is a need for revolution? Everything is what it is, right? And but now Bitcoin changed me, right? So this thing that Bitcoin brings out the people, that the ones that who are the most calmest and the one with the clearest minds, then they get inspired by, because it touches them on that same chord that keeps them calm, and that's the experiential truth, right? That we observe, right? That keeps us calm, right? So a person who's calm, it's not because of he does not want to do harm or take away things from other, because he sees the truth of the reality of the of what we are in it together, right? So I think Bitcoin is winning because I can see the changes in myself, and I have friends who have had momentous changes in themselves. So I think
that's exactly what we're going to be talking about here today. So
I'm thanks so much. Thanks so much, Zen, for sharing that. That's awesome. I think this is a great time to kick it off. I'd just like to formally welcome everyone to session number 2 of the first ever Cosmic Deep Dive online event. I'm John Schnow, and I'm host of the Bitcoin Path podcast, where we just have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty. and about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. And like I said at the beginning of the first session, the intention for this event is really just to help all of us kind of etch closer to that end of freedom and self-actualization. So I'm really excited to introduce John Vallis for session two here. John is a deeply appreciated podcaster and educator in the Bitcoin community. His show, Bitcoin Rapid Fire, is a place where John delves into the deeper side of the Bitcoin rabbit hole through long-form conversations with some of the amazing people who are building and contributing to this revolutionary new industry. He is a firm believer in Bitcoin as the future of money, and John has this knack for extracting gems of profound insights and in his discussions with other Bitcoiners. John, I'm really grateful for you coming here and spending this time with us. And with that, I'd just like to give you the floor and have you take it from here.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction and for the invite to be a part of this. This is a really cool event, and I think it's great that these things are being put together. And I'm excited because it gives me a chance to, one, geek out more on the things that I find so fascinating about this thing, and two, connect with other great people that maybe I haven't had the chance to connect with yet. And so what I'm hoping for this conversation is that basically I'm going to put forth some of the things that I've been thinking about and some of the ideas and insights and topics that I've been spending a lot of time contemplating. And then I'll give my two cents on it. And it would be great to, if any of members of the audience had any input or feedback on those issues, and then we can move forward from there. But, you know, I won't give my whole rabbit hole story, but just for context, you know, I worked in finance in the early part of my career. I worked in wealth management, which was effectively, you know, sales. I could have been selling couches. I just happened to be selling, you know, wealth management products, investment vehicles, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I really didn't like it. It was soul destroying, but I had always wanted to go there because I thought, you know, you make money by the easiest way to make money was to manage money, you know, and take a percentage off of someone else's wealth effectively, which is a horrible thing to think, but there you go. That's the state of the industry. And anyways, I left after 2.5 years or so because it was so soul destroying. And I'd always been an extremely curious person. And, you know, in my early 20s, I started to look out at the world and think, what the fuck is going on here? Like, this does not look like a pretty picture. We seem to be going in the wrong direction in pretty much every domain. And, you know, ultimately, I was disheartened because I didn't see a way to turn that around. And, you know, I became a gold bug, for one, because I saw the detrimental effects of what central banks did to currency and money around the world. And I thought, well, at least gold would be a way to hedge that in some way. And then, you know, I also looked at the psychedelic realm, because what I kind of relegated myself to was internal transformation and internal exploration and internal peace exclusively, almost, because the exterior world was so, there was so much hopelessness, I guess. It was so daunting out there. And not from a, like, I'm all for, you know, a good fight and working hard and all that kind of stuff. But on a macro level, I just saw so many forces that were seeming to inhibit effectively the, you know, the free expression of individuals and humanity. And those powerful forces seemed pretty daunting at the time. And so I went, you know, I went inward and explored, you know, the vast landscape in there and tried to derive some peace that way. And I did to a certain degree, but that still didn't change the outer world that I was encountering, you know, in my daily life, in my career and that kind of stuff. And so that kept being a point of stress and anxiety for me. And, you know, you'd have to manage it in different ways. And I would say the period of my life where I managed that the most poorly, was, you know, probably in my mid-20s, where I'd always been someone concerned with my health and valued relationships and, you know, spent time reading and developing my intellect and things like that. And for, you know, 2 or 3 years there, not even very, very subconsciously, I just kind of let go of the reins a bit, you know? And so very cliche story, but I partied too much. I stopped caring about my health as much. I stopped caring about my future as much and just kind of lived that, you know, destructive ultimately lifestyle. And it never got too out of hand, but from my perspective, it, you know, there was a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted money, and a lot of wasted brain cells in that period. And then I came across Bitcoin, and it didn't click for me immediately. You know, what clicked for me was that this was a money that government couldn't fuck with, that nobody could fuck with. And I really liked that from a philosophical level. I didn't even see it from an investment perspective initially. But I just, it was so nascent that, you know, I thought it's just a drop in the bucket. How could it ever become a challenge? How could it ever become a tool to leverage to turn this ship around? And then, of course, I kept track of it. And the more I spent with it and the more touches I got and the more I learned about it, my conviction that this could become something, you know, effectively a tremendous force for good in the world kept getting greater and greater and greater, to the point where now, like I'm sure many listening, you know, it's hard to think that my conviction could increase, although with each passing day, it finds a way of doing so. And, and you know, this has given me a tremendous sense of hope. And that's one of the things that we're going to discuss in our time today for the future. So it's very dramatically changed my perspective on what the future represents. You know, instead of a daunting, impossible to overcome set of blockades effectively, it's become a very open, inviting, you know, sea of potential that now is available to myself and everyone else to simply extract that potential in whatever way is most meaningful to us. And that creates substantial changes. So one of the things that I have always been interested in is psychology and human behavior. And, you know, to bring it back to the psychedelic pursuits, when that was something that I spent a lot of time on, one of the things I was thinking in terms of fostering change was, okay, the exterior world looks really daunting and scary, but I know that things could change tomorrow if people's behavior changed, because that's all the world is. It's just the emergent behavior of everybody who's on Earth, who's acting together. But that change comes extremely slowly, and there's no real incentive for it. You know, our own personal curiosity and whatever spiritual yearning we may have may pull us there, but there's not an immediate incentive to do that. And so one of the things that I find interesting about Bitcoin is that there is an immediate incentive to do that, because, and especially the more you learn about it, whether it's to protect your wealth or whether it's to get wealthier by noticing an asymmetry of information and capitalizing it before most other people capitalizing on it before most other people do, that's a strong incentive. And then when that pulls you in, you start to get exposure to all these things that also serve to change your behavior. And that's the key part that I'm interested in, right? Because Bitcoin, as cool and amazing as it is, it's just a tool. And a tool is only useful or relevant to the extent that it allows us, it permits or prohibits certain behaviors, right? It generates novel possibilities for behavior. That's why a tool is valuable at all, because it can do something different that we couldn't do before. And with Bitcoin, that is definitely the case. It allows us to store and transmit value in a way that we could never have done before, right? It allows us to develop a different relationship with our stored time, energy, labor than we ever could before. Very deeply meaningful things. So, you know, that's why this area is the most interesting thing for me, is one, seeing the different ways in which this tool is affecting our behavior, and then trying to understand the details of why. So in all of the podcasts that I've done thus far, a lot of them, you know, one of the questions I ask to the people that I speak to is, how has Bitcoin changed your life effectively? And I'm not looking for a dramatic answer to that. I'm just, you know, very has there been any changes? And most of the time, people will tell me, you know, a fairly extensive list. And a lot of the times the lists between guests are very similar. And that makes all of us, I know this is no news to most of you listening, but it makes all of us go like, huh, like that's interesting, weird, surprising, whatever. Why the fuck is that happening? And that's been the basis of one of my main interests here is actually trying to figure out why does this, you know, digital network that lives on the internet effectively that we're learning about and engaging it, why is it inspiring certain changes and consistency among changes amongst people? And then, you know, the kind of flower from that is the culture that's developing around Bitcoin, represented on Bitcoin Twitter and all the great, you know, creative artistic expressions that are beginning to emerge now, that embody a lot of those changes and principles and ethics and values that seem to be either emerging or being permitted to be expressed at a level and scale that previously, you know, there was no inspiration for. I don't want to say it wasn't possible, but it didn't seem to be, you know, inspired in people. So that's going to be what I want to explore today. I've got a bunch of different points to hit on. So I'll hit them. I'll give a brief explanation, and then I'll open it up to you guys if you want to jump in with anything that I said or any, you know, insights that you've had that I didn't touch on. Some of these will be basic, but I think just for kind of posterity, it's good to mention them, and some will be a little bit more, you know, esoteric, for lack of a better term. So before we get kicked off into that, any questions or comments before we get started? Nope. All right. Let me just consult the notes here. Yeah. So the first and most obvious one that people often talk about in terms of why Bitcoin incentivizes behavior change or inspires behavior change is the lowering of our time preference. And I think the best way to characterize this is, you know, we've heretofore not had such the punishing opportunity cost, let's call it that, is unprecedented, right? Once you realize what Bitcoin is and what it represents and what process is unfolding in its distribution and monetization, i.e. what's happening with its price, you have to think long and hard before you spend something on something else other than Bitcoin, because you're not, you've got to think in the framework or context of that thing costing you 100 times what it's costing you today in 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever years. And so having that intensity of opportunity cost is, one, very new to us. It's not something that we've generally had to contend with. And two, it's pretty powerful, right? So it really makes you look at things and say, do I need that? Or at least how much value do I place on this thing that I'm looking to acquire or something like that? And I think for a lot of us, it ends up turning us into types of minimalists where we look around and say, in fact, very few things are that valuable to me, right? For lack of a better term, I'd rather buy Bitcoin than buy another, you know, fill in the blank purchase that you may have made previously in your life. And I think having that extension or lowering of our time preference, one is it's a natural economic incentive, I would say, but I think it changes a lot about how we start seeing the world. You know, I think our culture generally has promoted and maybe even incentivized immediate gratification in many ways. So make money, spend money, get those kicks, whatever. And I think this is basically the antithesis of that, where it's saying, you know, push off the gratification as long as you possibly can. And naturally, this is having certain behavioral impacts. You know, I'm sure many of you are familiar with, you know, the Stoics and their writing, and this is kind of in line with their thinking, you know, in basically living that more conservative, more minimalistic life, engaging in or spending on things that are, you know, valuable beyond the immediate gratification that you receive from them, have deeper meaning. That's, you know, that becomes the framework or the rubric through which you assess the degree to which you're going to pay for or engage in things. And so I think that's one of the factors that's causing the behavior change amongst people that start to learn about and understand Bitcoin. And, you know, I'd love to hear from you guys if this has been true for you, and maybe a quick anecdote about the most poignant example for you.
I can speak to that just briefly, as I've kind of gone through this journey. I'm basically coming to the point where I've looked at all of my expenses and tried to say, well, what what part of this do I not need for the next, like, or what can I live? What is like the smallest amount of money that I can live on and survive, and, you know, provide for my most basic needs, and for the people who provide for, obviously, the people who depend on me. And then other than that, just save it, because there's like the amount, I mean, and maybe this is something we can get into a little bit, because I think there might be a couple people here who don't quite understand why Bitcoin is something that shifts the time preference so much. And so like maybe just connecting the nature of Bitcoin with why this is incentivizing this behavior. But, you know, because for me, when I look at it, and I know that money that I put into Bitcoin right now will exponentially increase in value over the next few years. It does give me a hard face look to like everything that I'm doing. And so just in terms of monetary allocation, which is a very basic thing, and not even a very, spiritual thing, but it does make me want to consolidate a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the opportunity cost piece is the best way to explain it to people that haven't had that much exposure to this idea, although I think a lot of Bitcoiners probably have. But what's I think relevant about that is that it kind of does, it really puts a lot of pressure on the value you assign to everything in your life. You know, it just changes that calculus. And so I think one of the interesting attributes, which I have, you know, noted to talk about, but it is what seems to be a tendency for Bitcoiners, the deeper down the rabbit hole they get, to ascribe far less value or increasingly less value to material things in favor of placing more value in Bitcoin, because of what it means for their future, because the optionality that it provides, because of the liberating feeling that it bestows. And then the things that they end up they end up continuing to value, or perhaps valuing more as a result of that changing perspective, are the intangible things that are effectively priceless. One's health, one's family, you know, ideas of beauty or art or creativity, like these things that you can't as easily put a market price on, they are the things that what I've been noticing a lot of Bitcoiners end up keeping in their kind of framework of things that, you know, they value highly. And because what the comparison is you compare things to, think about how much you value Bitcoin for all the things it represents, which we, you know, of course, we won't be able to touch on all of them today. But everything ultimately gets compared to that. So, you know, just to use an example, and no offense to the gamers out there, but you may look at and say, you know, is the PS5 or whatever version we're currently on, like, is it worth the amount of Bitcoin I could get for that? And maybe your calculus is you really love gaming, it's a big part of your life, and that, then you say yes. Or maybe you say no, because, you know, it's just not worth it for you. And that's kind of the framework you go through. But when it comes to, like, is it worth, you know, this gym membership or spending more on my diet to eat better, or, you know, a vacation with family members or whatever the case may be. When you compare it to that, like, you're comparing two things of extreme value then. And then I think you make a more sensible allocation. You say, and a more convicted one. Like, when you're comparing everything to something that when your measuring stick of value is something that you value so highly, when you make decisions against that thing, I think, you know, you lean into them more. Like, they're more of a truthful expression of the genuine degree of joy or love or passion that you derive from something, right? So again, to use the family example, it's like, if it's something that's going to cost me money to do something, enjoy time with my family, for example, then even contrasted against the extreme value I place in Bitcoin, that is a worthwhile expenditure of the money that I have. And I think this is why we also see is a lot of these values that are emerging, they become extremely sacred to people, almost like when you develop, you know, a new reverence for your health, a new reverence for your relationships, for your family, maybe for nature, and all of which I've seen happening amongst Bitcoiners. It's not just that those things are you value now, but you almost appreciate how much you value them because you know exactly what you're giving up in order to establish them or to engage in them. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic that I think is fostering, is part of what's contributing, excuse me, to the culture that's emerging. And, you know, so that's another thing. That's what I mean by, you know, the time preference having the impact that it does.
Definitely.
You know, another one is the understanding of money. So, you know, whether it's through, I know a lot of people first kind of got a context for understanding the history of money through the Bitcoin Standard, through Safe's book. And then there's been a lot of great resources and articles that have come out since. But once, you know, it's a question that so few people in our society today ask, and which is crazy because there may not, you know, there's a lot of big questions out there, but, you know, what is money is definitely one of the bigger ones. And I think what's great about, you know, Bitcoin is that a lot of people are now, as they come in, let's say they come in for number go up, or let's say they come in for libertarian ideas or whatever, they're beginning to understand the importance of understanding what money is, the role it plays, and the implications, the wide, you know, reaching implications of what the nature and the attributes of the money that a society is, what effects and what impacts that has on the culture that emerges on top of a society that uses a certain form of money. And so one of those things is, you know, one of the immediate takeaways is I've been getting robbed effectively. You know, you come to understand two things. You come to understand that money, rather than just being a piece of paper that gets you things, is actually emblematic of your time and your sacrifice and the energy and resources you committed to getting it. And, you know, that is a very, I hate to use the word again, but that's a very sacred relationship. I mean, we're giving our life force to something in order to obtain this other thing. And that other thing we get is equivalent to the sacrifice in time and energy that we made to get it. And that's, I mean, what could be more important than that? And to know that that is the very mechanism that a group of people are using to steal your time and your energy and your life force from you is a very sobering realization. And, you know, and what I'm talking about here, of course, is how central banks and banks that inflate money, that can create money at will, are robbing you of, you know, the value generated or the money that you've created through your own sacrifice. And once people realize this, one, it's somewhat shocking. Two, they're obviously motivated to try to counter this in some way. And this is, you know, obviously a huge aspect of why Bitcoin is important. But three, I think what it motivates in people is an adversarial mindset. Now, I know Bitcoin, you know, self-selects the people that come into it for many different reasons. And that's something I'll touch on a bit later. But I think a lot of people, even if they weren't very adversarially minded to begin with, once you realize that, once you realize that you've been getting robbed of the most important thing that you have surreptitiously without your knowledge for your entire life, it's hard not to feel a bit sour about that. And so I think because of that, what's generated in people is, you know, in pushing back from that is an adversarial mindset. It's saying, you know, first of all, fuck you. But second of all, you know, how do I stop you from having such an invasive and detrimental impact on who I am, my energy, and my life? You know, I don't think that's a fair relationship. And I think, you know, one of the things that develops is that adversarial mindset, or that distrust, maybe that's a more kind of plain language to use for it, is placed on many different other areas of our life. You know, because once the trust has been broken, and I know the trust was like strained to say the least in many cases today, but, you know, a lot of people had a certain degree of trust in the institutions that form the basis of our society. Once that big linchpin of trust has been broken and people kind of see the truth of that relationship, I think they take that same lens and they place it on a lot of other areas of their life and other institutions, rather, where they have some relationship of dependence, right? So maybe it's with, you know, the medical institutions, maybe it's with religious institutions, maybe it's with educational institutions, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's good, because I think it's good to have an inherent distrust of institutions that have so much leverage over how we live our lives. And not to say, you know, I'm obviously not anti-cooperation, but I just think that the initial spark of waking up creates an adversarial mindset. And when we're talking about the types of behavior change that emerge in this group of people and why they come up, I think one of the reasons why that adversarial mindset is developed is because of that, is because you wake up to the fact that you've been getting screwed for a long time on the most important thing that you have, which is your time, your life, your energy, your resources. And that creates a profound distrust that permeates into other areas. The other thing that's, you know, that you realize about money is that it's the ultimate form of optionality. And most people, I think we interact with money on that basis. We know, like, well, if I want to do more, I have to get more money, because money are kind of like my tickets to be able to do things. But I don't think people appreciate, you know, just what that optionality represents, nor how the optionality is different for different forms of money. And I would say that I think one of the reasons why Bitcoin is so exciting is because I do think it's the greatest form of optionality that we've ever had. It's the thing that we can turn into the most other products or services or capabilities of anything that we've ever encountered. And that's that conveys an extreme sense of liberation, which again is hugely instrumental into how people are feeling as a result of interacting with this thing. So I think that sense of liberation is a part of, you know, is another ingredient in the soup of what behavior changes are inspired when people start to understand what money is on a deeper level. Let me see. Yeah, the other one, which we've all, or many of us have come to, you know, have a certain slang for, is when we understand what money is, we start to see the relationship between the money that's in use and the structures and institutions that we get in society. We begin to realize that there is a relationship there, and that relationship is often what are the deficiencies in the money, whether they be related to trust, whether they be related to functionality or whatever. What do those deficiencies manifest in terms of governance structures and institutions in the world? Because they have huge implications, and we begin to understand that relationship. And so I think we begin to look at all those institutions as a vestige of the attributes of the money that we've been forced to use up till now. And so, you know, Saif in his book, I think introduced this to a lot of people, but now for fun and as a slang, we refer to these things as fiat, right? So we may refer to something as fiat food or fiat culture or, you know, fiat engineering. And basically what we're saying is like, these things are predicated on the corruption or the whatever deficiencies and detrimental attributes that we notice in the old money, the money that we've previously been forced to use, their manifestation in other areas, those same attributes being expressed in other things. And we call them fiat, which I love and I use quite liberally. But the point is that when people say they kind of see things, it's kind of like using the Matrix analogy where they see things for as they really are now. I think this is part of it. And understanding what money is and what it's, you know, how the different attributes and characteristics of a money impact what emerges in the broader world, that's kind of the cheat code to seeing the Matrix, because no longer is it, you know, you just look out on the world and think, well, it is what it is. You see a direct causal relationship between that fundamental mechanism on which society is built, which is the money, and the things that emerge from it. And so I think that goes into the change in perspective that we notice amongst a lot of Bitcoiners as a result of learning more about this. Any questions about that one or input or comments before I move on?
Yeah, I just want to make sure as well. Can you guys say in the chat whether you're able to unmute yourself? I just want to make sure everyone can jump in if they want to. Yep. Yeah, everyone's able to.
All right. And I'm seeing chat messages as well. Let me just catch up real quick.
Yeah, Herman just had an input earlier that where he said, I feel that my dignity is safe and it enables me to move forward in my life and create value for my relationships. That is what Bitcoin does for me.
Yeah. And I see Lucas said, I'm feeling more confident and I started to act like a very wealthy person. My friends don't believe in Bitcoin because they can't see and touch it. It isn't hard to explain, but they don't want to understand. Another thing, the Bitcoin network shows us how finance can be simple and third-party turn hard. Yeah. You know, that's a funny phenomenon as well, the kind of acting like a wealthy person, because even, for people that don't have a large nominal amount of US dollar equivalent wealth in Bitcoin, the sense of wealth that's conveyed by knowing that you totally own it and you totally control it, I get that sentiment, you know, like you feel like you have the optionality or the power, for lack of a better term, of someone with a great amount of wealth simply because you and you alone are the one in control of it and it can't be taken from you. And again, that is such a liberating feeling. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that's hard to articulate, you know, too specifically. But that feeling of liberation that a lot of these different elements that, you know, we feel and we recognize and we realize from engaging with Bitcoin, those things permeate our lives in a lot of ways that are even subconscious. And we only kind of every now and then when we reflect on them or they're given some time to play forward and then we reflect back on our behavior and we start noticing them, that they start to come out. But that's what's so beautiful about this. And again, why it's so juicy for me is because these, you know, changes inspired by a sense of freedom. Like, what could be more pure than that? What could be better than that when we see, you know, people actually expressing what it means to be free? I mean, that's the ultimate as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, and that's why it's so fun to try to investigate, you know, just what processes are underlying that for each individual. All right, let me read another one here. In the sense of liberation.
Just to jump in real quick, for you guys who are in the audience, it may be a more efficient way. If you want to jump in with your voice, you can raise your hand. There should be a button there for you to raise your hand next to your name. That's all.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing about the money and the type of market that the money fosters is, I think it's becoming more and more clear. Well, one, the attributes of the money, like I said, will go a long way to determining the type of market that's built on top of that, what it permits and what it prohibits. And I think a realization for the type of market that Bitcoin is creating or is fostering, you know, fair, merit-based, incorruptible, et cetera, I think that this is placing greater emphasis on people to adjust themselves to be more in line with the principles that the market is espousing. And of course, ultimately, it becomes kind of a feedback loop where the attributes of the money are dictating what behaviors work in the market, and then the market participants are feeding into that. But things like honesty and integrity and humility and competency, I think this system, because it doesn't allow for corruption, is placing more emphasis on those things to be expressed by individuals. And I actually think it's probably the community that's developing on top of this market is incentivizing those behaviors, because I like to think, and I could be wrong on this one, but I feel like they're being rewarded in a variety of different ways, whether it's, you know, notoriety and recognition, whether it's, you know, business of certain kind. But it seems to me that businesses in the space that value honesty, integrity, openness, transparency, competency, they're being rewarded by the market participants. And I think that may have always been the case to a certain degree, but I just think it's being amplified now. You know, the next big one that causes behavior change, and again, this was probably obvious to many of you, but it is that piece about the future being brighter than we previously imagined it to be. And I think that acts as an attractor pulling us forward rather than something pushing us away. I mean, I gave my particular anecdote about, you know, in my early 20s, what my perception of the exterior world caused me to do. And, you know, to oversimplify a bit, it caused me to withdraw into myself. And there was bright spots there, but there was also a lot of darkness there, because I, you know, what I saw on the horizon just pushed me away from it. It wasn't inviting. It wasn't pulling me forward. It was saying, this is daunting. This is, you know, evil, fill in the blank, whatever. And it caused me to withdraw. And now what I see, the potential and possibility for Bitcoin, I think, is changing the perspective of what lies on the horizon. And it's giving a hope and a motivation that all those things, or many of the things that we're seeing, can actually be turned around, and the ship can be righted. And then what I feel it's doing is placing the focus back on each of us as individuals to say, okay, now that the future doesn't look so scary. In fact, now that the future represents an increasing amount of possibility and potential and opportunity, the biggest limiting factor now is you. It is your capability. It is your motivation. It is your inspiration. It is your willingness to, you know, refine yourself enough to take advantage of that opportunity now. And that is such a huge difference. I mean, and this is one of the things that makes me, when we hear about all the, you know, of course we live in a fairly chaotic world today. There's lots of issues, and a lot of people online and on Twitter and new media and stuff, they'll be talking about all these issues. And the thing that always gets me is that if you're not talking about Bitcoin, all of your discourse about these issues seems almost moot, you know, because we do have, at least in the Western world, a crisis of diseases of despair. And I think we know as Bitcoiners that a lot of that is predicated on, one, the world that has been constructed and is currently probably decomposing around extremely poor form of money, and the sense of despair and the sense of hopelessness that the future in that world is causing people to perceive. And so the fact that this thing turns that on its head and it says, no, the future can actually be way better than you could ever even imagine. And now the only thing that determines how great it is for you is you. And now your behavior and how you refine yourself or how you make yourself more fit to capitalize on that is all that matters, because it's, you know, it's there now and it's waiting for you. And there's a, you know, there's, that's an incredibly motivating change in perspective, I would say. And so I think that's a huge, huge element of the behavior change that we're seeing in the space, because, you know, the anxiety induced frenzy of feeling that the world is closing in on you has been reversed. And now the world is expanding to accommodate greater possibility. And it's enticing you to make yourself, you know, better in order to capitalize on it. And the that shift in perspective is priceless.
Yeah, I think something that makes me think of John is just how driven to action much of the Bitcoin community is, and how the more I talk to different Bitcoiners and meet them, like, everyone has their special projects, like things that they're working on. They're so interesting, so cool, just contributing amazing things to freedom and to society and improving their own personal life. And it's so fascinating to see that.
Yeah. And you know, another, when I go through these, I'm amazed at how many powerful influences there are, which makes it seem a lot more rational that this thing really does consume so many of us. You know, I know if you're here listening to this, you know, there's a high likelihood that Bitcoin consumes a lot of your, you know, free mind space, you know, when you're not devoted to other tasks. And I think rightly so, because of these things, because we're confronting this thing that has all of these attributes and more. And you kind of have to be dead not to be set on fire by the prospect of the possibilities that this represents. And so, you know, moving on to another one is, I think even though Bitcoin is a, you know, digital network, let's say, we notice certain elements or attributes or characteristics of it. And I think when we're confronted with those characteristics and how well they're working, I think it causes us to, in some way, contrast that, you know, kind of the ideal with some of those elements that we can see in ourselves, or some that we can interpret elements of ourselves and compare them to. So things like, you know, if you look at Bitcoin, some of its more prominent attributes are its incorruptibility, right? Its openness and transparentness. It's verifiable. It's fair. It treats everyone the same. There's no free lunch. You have to prove your work. And I know this is, you know, actually, I don't think this is much of a stretch. You know, whenever we encounter anything, I think, you know, we automatically observe its surface level attributes. And if we care to look into it deeper, perhaps we perceive some deeper elements. And I think Bitcoin is an instantiation of some of these really valuable, virtues almost. And we see it coordinating all of this activity that we think is incredibly valuable. And I think it begs the question in us to say, you know, how am I lining up on some of those virtues that, you know, Bitcoin is espousing to coordinate all of this activity and to have this level of positive impact? And so one of the ones that I think about a lot is the incorruptibility. And, you know, hopefully Bitcoin maintains its incorruptibility. That's pretty much what this whole thing is predicated on. And I think we should simultaneously work on that attribute within ourselves as well. And I think for some people and to some degree, that will happen naturally, and maybe it should be a more active pursuit as well. But by incorruptibility, I mean, like, what is the strength of your character, I guess? You know, like, when push comes to shove, or in the quiet moments, or if you're able to do, you know, something that you know is not good, but you know you can't get caught for, or whether it has to do with integrity or dishonesty or whatever. I mean, like, what is your level of incorruptibility? And, like, I think we live in a society today, again, through no small part due to the money on which society is predicated, that, you know, people are fairly corruptible. You know, and you could say it in a softer way and say, you know, people respond to their incentives, and because the incentives are screwed up in society, you get bad behavior. But to me, that doesn't absolve them of the bad behavior; just makes it socially acceptable. But what is that worth? I think, if anything, this year has shown us the danger and the insanity in certain respects of judging what we believe to be, right or good or bad based on social consensus. That's a very slippery slope that I think it's best to develop those things internally as individuals. But nevertheless, I think at least I've been contemplating this idea of incorruptibility, and I've always prided myself on being an honest person. Like, I remember the first time I came home drunk, me and my buddies, when I was a young teenager, we went to the park and, drank a bunch of beer that I'm sure we, stole from our dad's, fridge or something. And we came home, and my mom was waiting there for me in the porch. And she was like, where have you been? And I thought for a second, I could say I was over at my friend's sleepover. We had a bunch of candy and just try to do a horrible lie. But I said, look, I drank a bunch of alcohol. I'm really, really tired. You can punish me in the morning, but I'd really love to just go to bed right now. And I know that's a silly anecdote, right? But I'm just trying to say that, it's always been something, honesty's always been something that I've really valued. And the reason why I valued it is because I felt like lying was creating a false reality. I felt like lying was creating a fork of reality. And for some reason that, I don't really have any further insight into, I've always been extremely concerned with or highly valued engaging with reality in the most truthful way possible, like wanting to know and act in reality. And I felt like lying was creating a separate reality that wasn't true. And I didn't want to be a part of that. But maybe this is a bit of a stretch, but I do think that when we encounter something that's so meaningful to us with these attributes, we start to contrast those attributes within ourselves to that thing. And I think it begs the question, are you as, fill in the blank, are you as incorruptible? Are you as fair? Are you as, open or transparent as this thing that you so highly value? And if not, I think there's an impetus or there's a motivator to refine that. And I can only speak for myself on this one, because it's not one that I've talked to too many people about, but I do find that that idea of being incorruptible is just, I find it swimming around in my head more and more these days of in what areas of my life or in what ways about my thinking could I introduce more incorruptibility into my mindset and into my behavior. And so I think that's another one of those things, that the contrast between us and it is fostering or motivating a lot of changes in perspective and ultimately changes in behavior. And so that's why I included it in this discussion. Any thoughts, comments on that one? I'd actually love to hear if anyone had similar thoughts to that one, and in looking at things about Bitcoin and have they integrated or compared elements within Bitcoin with elements within themselves?
Sure, John. I'd like to add to that. So all my life, you're just born into this, right? So you see this whole thing, this thing is happening, and I have to figure out what's going on, right? So the pursuit I went into was a clarity of understanding, right? So people may call it peace, but peace would only come once you have the clarity of understanding of what this really is, whatever we call reality, right? So you go through school, you look at science, you try to look at it with the scientific perspective, but still it doesn't come to a very personal level, right? It still seems very much of an a subjective reality, right? It's kind of it does not in the end give you that peace, right? You get all the science, you get all the stuff, but you are still in the world, in a world where there's all this pain and suffering, and then you just can't still get that level of clarity, right? And then most of the people then go through down the spiritual path, right? And that's just going internal, deeper into yourself and seeing to first ask the question, who am I, right? And that's when you can come up with the clarity, when at least you have the right identity of what you identify as, right? So I've been through that path, and seeing I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, and coming back to just being this blank space of awareness, right? That most can feel, right? Because most can't feel because their mind is so active all the time that it just distorts that that base awareness that you have, right? So I kind of went into that path, and then finally, all right, I found myself as this, just being an open awareness that's not located anywhere in a physical reality or a time, right? Because time and perception of space all are happening within the awareness, right, itself, right? So you come to a sense of identifying yourself as this awareness. So all right, all good, I found the clarity I was looking for, but yeah, but I still have this duality thing going on. I still have an ego and a world that is interacting and is still playing out the patterns that it has just taken in from the environment and the stimulus it has been going through the time, right? And what Bitcoin did to me was I could just give this thing to my mind that, yes, my mind now understands that there is a truth in this duality also, in this subjective reality, there is a truth, right? So whenever I would come up with my old patterns of beliefs and perceptions about people, thing, and all the world, I could just give it the anchor of Bitcoin, right? Hold on to this, look at this, and then I can again align myself to, all right, yeah, I see myself as clarity. I can be clear here also because I can see the reality here, the truth here as well in Bitcoin. And now all my actions and all my words can come out from that. So that helped me get that seat of being in clarity, even while I'm not being disturbed by the world in the sense in by my mind. But even if the mind is actually bringing up some stuff, I could just go deeper down the trail and find it where it is relating to Bitcoin. And because all the value, all the subjectivity around the world, all that measure come from the understanding of what really money is. So yeah, that's really, it was powerful for me.
Yeah, I love that, Zen. And I, you know, I feel like I understand what you were saying, and I felt it a lot. And, you know, this touches on the idea or the sense of peace that Bitcoin seems to convey to people that, you know, really grok it and engage with it. And again, that's, you know, that's been my experience as well. And it's fascinating because, you know, to the comment about feeling like a rich person or something, like, I think that's an element of it is you have a sense of peace that can guide you in many different domains. You know, one is obviously that sense of owning your time and being in control of that again, and knowing that nobody can take it from you, and knowing the degree of optionality it gives you, you know, to travel, to move around, to express that value that you've accumulated wherever and however you see fit. I mean, that presents a profound sense of peace, but also about our anxiety toward the future. I mean, even if you think that the future is going to be wonderful and prosperous and peaceful and amazing, you know, the Bitcoin Renaissance sort of thing, which I do, it still doesn't take away from the fact that in an uncertain world, in linear time, the future is uncertain. And there's a certain degree of anxiety that can be associated with that. And I feel like because of Bitcoin's qualities, it almost serves as a counterbalance to that anxiety about the future. You know, one thing is going to be, you know, something that's very instrumental in your life and in how you express yourself in life, you can almost have confidence that that thing is going to persist in a similar form and continue to perform the same function in the same way into the future. And I think, you know, that counterbalance of the chaos of the future is incredibly valuable and bestows an incredible sense of peace. And like, I've always been a very, you know, pretty calm person and, you know, not too worried about the future, but this engaging in this thing and having this tool to rely on to be a part of me effectively and help me navigate the uncertainty of what the future holds. Like, I'm without question feeling a dramatically enhanced sense of peace as a result of this. I mean, and I'm sure, like, I mean, this year again is another great example. I mean, look at all the craziness that's happening in the world today. And look at us. if you step on Bitcoin Twitter, yes, we're critical of the things that we're seeing happen in the world. But I think partially as a result of the sense of peace that we're feeling because we are engaging with and leveraging Bitcoin, we can approach it with a certain degree of humor about it all. You know, we can say, like, we can make all the jokes and memes that we make, because even though I don't think we're suggesting or acting like there aren't challenges ahead, or that, you know, we won't be met with challenges personally, but I think it's the confidence and peace that comes with knowing that we have such a strong ally in how we deploy and save our energy and our time, that the uncertainty of the future and even the chaos of the moment is given less weight and gravity in our perspective and in our emotions. And, you know, again, that is why it has such a, it imbues such a sense of peace because of that. And it's incredible.
So true. I love Alistair's comment here in the chat box. It says, I understood why, quote unquote, the world was broken before Bitcoin, but Bitcoin allowed me to understand how the world is broken. And that gives me somewhere pragmatic to start fixing things within my local environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's like those, whatever analogy you want to use, seeing the matrix or putting on, you know, the orange colored glasses or whatever. I mean, having all of these different understandings of some of the most fundamental elements of ourselves and of society converge at once over one thing. For clarity of perception about how things work, it really seems to be a kind of a cheat code, you know, that you're just able to connect a lot of the dots that previously, you know, were difficult to connect. And again, like the premise of the beginning of this thing about Bitcoin being hope, it's like not only connect the dots, but be able to connect the dots and see how, you know, they can conform or align toward a direction that, you know, is good and that you're happy to pursue and that is hopeful. I mean, so I agree. I mean, it definitely allows people to see things more clearly. And, you know, I just made reference to what that sense of peace elicits. And one of the things is, you know, when you're at peace, when you're not consumed with anxiety and consumed with fear about the future or even the present moment, then some of the better elements of your nature can be expressed. Humor, joy, love. Like, I feel like when we remove the concerns, those things are given more room to flourish. And that's a beautiful thing. I think it's why we're seeing a lot of those elements emerge in Bitcoin. And, you know, I have one of the things I wanted to touch on here was the culture emerging around Bitcoin. Because, you know, my foundational premise is, as I've articulated already here today, is the culture we get is primarily determined by the money on which that culture and that society and that market is predicated. And, you know, now that we're learning about this stuff, we can start to see all those connections, because that would be a kind of an absurd notion to people that aren't familiar with monetary history, aren't familiar with Bitcoin, don't understand how money works and all that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of us start to see that relationship. And then it, you know, begs the question, and this is kind of what we're exploring here today, is what kind of culture emerges on top of a money system like Bitcoin. And, you know, the best, you know, analogy was, we look back at the periods in time when the world or different areas were on a gold standard, and we say, hey, look, you know, society looked pretty good then. It was more peaceful. It was more prosperous. It was more innovative, et cetera. And so that's why I'm so interested in this, because we are the first, you know, the first cohort of people through which this new culture is being expressed. You know, I always find it funny, and I'm guilty of this too, but we're kind of looking out of the world. We're looking at the price, and we're looking at, you know, Twitter to see who's talking about Bitcoin now, and what institutions and governments have given it approval or adopting it. And it's almost like we're spectators and like waiting for Bitcoin to be adopted. And again, the primary thing we look at is the price, of course, and it's exciting for everybody. But we are the happening. This is the thing that I always come back to. It's like, we're not waiting for anything to happen. It's happening to us and through us right now. We are what happens. We are the individual behaviors and the culture that emerges when a new and better form of money is introduced. And what we're figuring out now is what precisely that means, based on what precise type of money and attributes Bitcoin is. That's the juicy question. It's like, okay, we look back and we say gold on top of gold, these types of cultures were built. On top of fiat, these types of cultures were built. On top of rocks, the stones, these types of cultures were built. What type of culture and what types of behaviors are inspired, emerged, motivated, incentivized through being built atop Bitcoin? And we are the first reflection of that. And that's a trip. And I'm not trying to be self-aggrandizing. That's just the case. We're here for whatever reason. We were brought into this relatively early, and here we are grappling with it, trying to figure it out. And that's the very reason for this conversation today, because we're all kind of like, this thing is stranger than we think it is. Like, let's try to understand it as best we can, and let's try to understand the impact and the influence it's having over us. And because we recognize it's having such a big one. And so that's on the individual level. On the cultural level, or on the collective level, it's interesting to see what's popping up. Again, most of our exposure to the quote unquote Bitcoin culture is probably through Bitcoin Twitter right now, which may be somewhat disheartening to some, but not me. I think it's amazing what's going on there. But, you know, there's amazing places to witness the culture off of Twitter, people doing interesting things with art and entrepreneurs and you know, all sorts of stuff. And the question I ask myself is like, what are some of the attributes of this culture that's emerging on top of Bitcoin? And so some of the principles that I came up with, and, you know, again, I'd love to have some of your input here. But I see principles like, and not exclusively, of course, but I think principles like honesty and integrity, intellect, good intentions, creativity, contribution, humility, gratitude, humor, confidence, fun, commitment, individual freedom and responsibility, intolerance to, when these attributes are not being exhibited. This is what I see kind of emerging. And I get, to people that aren't savvy or privy to that, it can sometimes seem abrasive. And if you run afoul of you know, the cyber hornets, and that I think kind of protects some of these principles, then you will get summarily handled with. And I think that's great too. You know, I'm definitely not someone who, I think fighting reveals character. Let's put it that way. And so that's why when I see fighting in Bitcoin land, or even when I you know, see fighting in the martial arts land, I'm intrigued by it, because I think it's a tool for refining character and refining ideas and revealing character. But needless to say, I think these are some of the principles that are emerging in this culture. And I think that's very fascinating. And, you know, if anyone has any insights into that, I'd love to hear them.
Herman just had a question. Or an input. Herman, would you like to jump in and ask it yourself?
Can you hear me, Kerr?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. My question is just because we create reality and we create Bitcoin. So the use cases on Bitcoin, we are part of it. You know, Bitcoin is creating us. So we can put some use cases on it. So my question is, aren't we creating a new reality and a new world, like in a new sense? Because the use cases on fiat money is consuming and paying taxes. So we've got new money here. So we use it, so we own it, and we are sovereigns. So we decide what's happening with that new network and the network effects and what's going on. So for me, there's just a little, it's a bit cloudy what we can do with Bitcoin, you know, what I can do with it. So yeah, what do you think is happening? What can we do? Looking into ourselves and looking outside and making a better world, better relationships, having an awesome time preference for the future, for our relationships. You know, it gives us the chance to have a global coordination for global problems, for water, climate change, for all the global governance problems we have. So I think it's time that we have got something like Bitcoin to give us the governance and the power to solve problems, have different quadratic voting and things being not trust-based, but being applied on a new protocol. Because I think with the printing, you know, that machinery helped us to have the words and ideas being copied and being taken to the world. We've been able to read and don't believe to those guys out there telling us what to do in the 14th century. And 100 years later, we, you know, like 100 years we could read and read books, and we had versatility and more choice, and the ideas multiplied. And so with the French Revolution, the people got more clarity, more awakening. And now we've got, with the internet, there's mathematics coming into play, which moved on as well. You know, we had the Greeks with how they have seen reality and shaping their world and their governance. And now we've got the internet, where the shelling point is mathematics as well, where mathematics and code is coming in. And for me, it describes the world awesomely. You know, there's so many questions. I'm 55, so I can see two paradigms. I can see all the analog world and the digital world now, where there's mathematics, energy, you've got binary code and things describing quantum physics. So looking inside in yoga and meditate. So I've got so many more possibilities to be a better person, you know, and have a measuring stick coordinating our lives. So how do you feel about it? Sorry, I was going on about it.
No, I appreciate the question. My feeling on it is I totally agree. I mean, I think you're right in that this will, you know, reality is a tricky word, but I think it'll build up a new environment at the very least around us, because it will be predicated and formed on the basis of the type of money Bitcoin is, the things that it incentivizes and prohibits and permits. So I think that will absolutely happen. I think what's amazing about Bitcoin is that, and talking about some of our larger problems, for example, I think when you have a money that can't be corrupted, right? So no one gets, nobody gets more power in that system to steal from others, to create more for themselves unfairly. I think what you get is the emergent value set of all the actors in that system, because, you know, we vote, the most important vote we cast is with our money. It's what we choose to support, what we choose to consume, what we choose to, all that kind of stuff. And so when the money is not corrupted, when those votes, you know, can't be cast for us, or someone can't harvest our votes and vote for something else, when everyone has total control over their spending and their money and their, you know, effectively time and life force, and they're able to deploy it how they see fit, then the world that we get emerging as a result is a pristine image of the collective value set. And the problems that are solved and the things that are emerged, and maybe even the problems are created, are the most genuine reflection possible of what the collective and all the individuals that compose that are feeling inside, what their priorities are, what their values are, what their ethics are, what their principles are. All that will be expressed in pristine fashion when the method that they express that in, i.e. the money, can't be corrupted or co-opted by anybody else. And that's a really interesting dynamic, because then it kind of shines a spotlight back on us, and rightly so, to say, you want a better world, you refine the individual. You put pressure on the individual to refine themselves. It's not something to be dealt with out there. Out there will be an emergent property of the collect, you know, of each individual's behavior. And now that expression of all those things within them, their values, their ethics, principles, et cetera, is not clouded, it's not diluted, it's pristine. And I think, you know, that means that if we want a better world, we can more easily see the relationship between a better world and improvement of the individual and refinement of the individual and greater understanding of self. You know, and this is kind of where, you know, the worlds of spirituality and psychedelics and religious thought and all that kind of stuff line up with Bitcoin, because the relevance or the importance of those things will become amplified, because people's spending, people's quote unquote votes will carry that much more weight, because it won't be diluted. It won't be siphoned off. It won't be stolen from them. It won't be mischaracterized by corrupting the manner in which they express it, which is the money. So I think that's a very interesting question. And it boils down to, I think we're going to see people, it's going to be revealed. People's true colors are going to be revealed. And I think this is already something that we're seeing in the Bitcoin space. Like, anybody who kind of dives into that mix and starts expressing themselves, whether it's through starting a business, whether it's through their writings, whether it's through whatever, I think it's pretty easy to see what their motivations are, what their principles are, what their values are. And I think that will continue to develop and continue to, be amplified. And I think, you know, my optimistic view is that we will ultimately have a world where people's true inner circumstances are able to be expressed and reflected. And of course, it's a feedback, right? Like, the world informs us, we inform the world. But I think that relationship will become a lot clearer and a lot more pure. And I'm hoping it means that through some of the, and because of some of the reasons that we've discussed already of how Bitcoin inspires change in people, that combination of, you know, values and principles and ethics, and to put an umbrella around it, good or right behavior, is allowed to be pushed to the forefront in people's minds and in terms of how they prioritize, you know, their considerations and the things that they desire to express and refine within themselves more. I think as those come to the forefront and their expression out into the collective, into the whole is not diluted, I think we're going to see a far more peaceful world, honest world, world of greater integrity, world of greater, you know, principles and ethics and things like that, in addition to the creativity and the innovation and the fun and all of the rest of it. But I think the punchline is that this type of money allows for more pristine expression of the truth of effectively who people really are. And we will get to see that with greater clarity. And I think that the fact that we are able to see that with greater clarity puts more pressure on people to refine those things and to not to not feed the negative ones, I guess, or to they can't hide from the light as much as perhaps they once could.
We've got a question here from Filter. He's raising his hand.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
So, yeah, I thought I'd throw my two cents in on what you guys have been talking about. And so I think the first thing is how Bitcoin changes me. I feel like it kind of raises the stakes a little bit in my life. On one hand, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. On one hand, I'm freer, right? I've got my autonomy. I can spend my money how I want to. On the other hand, there's kind of this forcing function now for my responsibility. I've got to educate myself technically. I've got to be smart about how I think about passwords and seeds and stuff like that. And, self-hosting is a lot of responsibility if you're really sort of seriously getting into Bitcoin. And I think the cool thing about that, you know, things that are hard will make us grow stronger. And I think right now the world is in this situation where we've offloaded all of that responsibility to a third party. And so that makes us weaker. And sort of to get at what you guys are talking about what Bitcoin is becoming and where it's going, to me, I kind of see it like it's a living thing, in the sense that our bodies, you know, our brains, our cells, everything is really a living network. And to me, this is just an extension of that network. We're all a part of that. We're all communicating. But now we've kind of, it's kind of locked us into a common truth. And that sort of makes us one body in a way. So that's kind of where my head is at.
The body analogy is, that's pretty, it's very, it's, it has some deep roots, right, into even religious thought. The church was known as the body of Christ, right? No, don't want to make it, bring things too esoteric here, but.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think money is an extension of consciousness, or is an extension of our will. And when you have a money system that is of the kind that Bitcoin is, a closed system that doesn't have any data loss, that doesn't have, you know, that can't be corrupted, I think what you have by extension is a type of global consciousness. And I think that's some kind of what I was referring to in the last point, where when you have all of these people expressing themselves through an incorruptible money system, expressing their will, expressing their values through how they deploy their capital, quote unquote, in that system, and everybody using the same system, then I think what emerges from that is the collective consciousness, is the collective value set, is the collective wellspring of creativity from which you draw the potential from imagination and try to make it real in the world. And those things are prioritized again by the collective value set. You know, that thing will determine what types of novelty do we want to introduce into the world? Do we want to take from imagination and make real? What are the highest priorities for that? What are the lowest? You know, because value will flow based on, capital will flow rather based on how much each of those different ideas or, you know, manifestations of novelty from imagination are valued by the collective. So I don't even think it's that esoteric to say that, you know, a unified global money, which represents the will and the values of each individual person, because that's how they express them into the world, that thing taken together represents the conscious will of humanity. I mean, I don't think that's esoteric. I think that's pretty plain to see.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that too.
100%. I think just one quick observation that I had while you're talking about that, John, is like the enabling of communication, the heightened enabling of communication that's able to take place here is just making the flow of ideas and the fighting dynamics that we see within the Bitcoin community and elsewhere in social media and everything, that there's so much fighting that's going on right now, as we're all so aware. But it's almost like voices can be silenced. There's not a free flow of ideas for things to really get hashed out and really be brought into the open, and in order to fully examine for ourselves as a collective body of humanity, if you will, what is the optimal course of action. So I think that Bitcoin can enable that, and it does enable that in the Bitcoin community right now. So people are able to hash out ideas and fight amongst ourselves plenty, which I think is extremely healthy in the idea realm, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, funny thought that I had a couple of days ago is, you know, if aliens were to be observing us or to come down to Earth, like, why would we ever think that their approach to understanding us would be to connect with fill in the blank leader, president, or whomever? Like, why would they even value the words that come out of our mouth? What they would look at is our behavior, how we transact our collective value. All the more easily done if we were on a system like Bitcoin, because it's all contained in the one system, and they could just look and see, oh, well, by this flow of resources, by these resource allocations, we can clearly infer the truth that they prioritize XYZ, they value XYZ, this is what they're about. The words are meaningless, you know, as is so often the case, which is why, hopefully, in a Bitcoin denominated future, to bring it back down to our mere mortal concerns, is that, you know, politics as it's instantiated today is such a farce. I mean, I don't know if it was Ice Cube or whoever, but, like, you know, talk is cheap, motherfucker. It's the behavior that matters. And I think when we're all on a system that communicates our will and our values pristinely, as I believe Bitcoin will do, then we will know each other through our actions and through how we express our will through our deployment of that resource that we have under our dominion. And, you know, I think that will reveal, among other things, a greater degree of truth about who we are and what we're about and what we prioritize and what we value and what we collectively, you know, want to achieve, I guess. So, yeah, just a funny thing that popped in my head recently about how clear, you know, about aliens looking down on us from afar. But, I think the point about money in general reflecting our will, but the fact, the scenario in which we're all on the same money system, and nobody's expression of their will through the use of the money can be diluted by or co-opted by any mechanism, and so that our expression, our speech effectively, is pristine. I mean, I think that will make for I think that'll make for a better world, because there'll be far less noise to filter through, and people's values and principles will be plain to see, and that's the basis on which we can interact. Let me see. I had a couple more here that I wanted to touch on. Just a kind of a quick note on, you know, I love thinking about anyone who's interested in truth and reality and who thinks about these concepts. You know, you can't help but try to determine the ways in which you've been conditioned, your thinking, your perspective. You know, the reason why I'm speaking English now is because I was born in Canada, right? And it grew up in a certain environment, and I have certain tendencies and habits and, you know, perspectives that are determined by where I was born and in whose company and all the rest of it. And so you see, you know, who am I without the conditioning? And, you know, Zen actually brought up a point that is kind of more in the spiritual or esoteric realm, where, like, if you peel back all the conditioning, then you're basically just, you know, conscious awareness inside a meat vehicle avatar, which, you know, is great because you get to have a unique point of view and perspective. But the way I was thinking about it in these terms was obviously the old nature versus nurture discussion about why we become who we become. And I don't, this thought is not incredibly well fleshed out for me, but just to bring, you know, your awareness to the point that the introduction, you know, our environment goes a long way to conditioning, you know, who we are and how we behave. And the fact that Bitcoin now exists in our environment, I feel like it's dramatically expanded the scope of our environment. And that's been the basis of this conversation. And this is why we're so excited in Bitcoin, because of the possibilities, right? The possibilities for the future, the possibilities for the present, the possibilities for coordinating and interacting and communicating, all of this stuff we've been discussing. The fact that that thing is now a part of our environment that shapes us, I don't know the degree to which that will have an effect on us. But if we accept the fact that our environment goes a long way to shaping and molding us, then that we've introduced something so foreign but so incredibly impactful into our environment is bound to have some influence on us just by virtue of the fact that it's a, you know, it's a introduction of something massively novel and impactful into our environment. And so I think that's something to consider when we're looking at the different ways that, you know, Bitcoin may be fostering different behavior and different perspectives within us. Another point that I've been thinking about recently and that I think is an important aspect of Bitcoin is the realization of the importance of constants. You know, a lot has been made of comparing kind of fiat money to a measuring stick that always changes its length, you know, and how that makes it very difficult to build things using that measuring stick. And so Bitcoin is kind of that constant measuring stick of value, and that will allow for, you know, much better economic calculation and all the rest of it. And I agree with that, but I think that the fact that that's become clear to a lot of people that start thinking about Bitcoin, I feel like I've noticed a tendency for that to inspire the exploration of the usefulness of other constants in other areas of our lives. And you know, when we're talking about behavior change that results from being engaged and involved in Bitcoin, I think that is a somewhat significant one. And, you know, the ones that first come to mind, you know, kind of other constants and principles or absolutes that help you orient your behavior or help you orient your life in some way or coordination with other people. And some that come to mind is things like the nuclear family, you know, approach to diet, philosophical, religious, and legal absolutes like right to property or free speech. Like these things that the kind of bedrock ideas or philosophies or approaches to yourself or those in your immediate environment, they seem to be developing, there seems to be a greater appreciation for them. And I think one of the reasons for that is because of Bitcoin's kind of existence as a constant is inspiring people to realize the value of constants in our lives for coordinating our behavior. And then they're looking in other domains to see if other constants would be equally helpful in helping us form our perspective and coordinating our behavior. And I think, you know, from my perspective, at least right now, the answer is yes. Like I think there are certain constants or absolutes that we should have as individuals, whether in society or whether you know, society is not a factor for consideration, that do help us coordinate ourselves and orient ourselves properly. You know, and I think those operate on a spiritual level, a legal level, philosophical level, social level, familial, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's one that if anyone has any comments on that, I'd be interested to hear them because it's not one that's too well fleshed out in my mind quite yet.
I have some thoughts if no one else does it, and definitely open to hearing everyone else input, everyone else's input here, but what that reminds me of is one of the things that Jordan Peterson talks about a lot is the introduction of, while reflecting on the story of Adam and Eve with the tree of knowledge of good and evil, there was this aspect where they were all of a sudden aware of their being, of their independence, of their of self-knowledge and of their intellect, but they were also, because of that, they were aware of their vulnerability at the same time, where the other individuals could take advantage of that vulnerability, and so it made it created this open, it opened up this possibility for misalignment in incentives, where these people, you had to worry about your neighbor, whether they're going to kill you or not. Whereas any other animal isn't, like a cow isn't necessarily worried that his neighboring cow is going to like deceive him into, stealing all of his, stealing his life or doing something treacherous to him. So what I find fascinating is that Bitcoin, I'm kind of like grasping on how to connect this to what exactly you were talking about, but Bitcoin seems to be aligning our incentives in a way that we can reestablish a certain base layer of trust amongst ourselves and interact with certain assumptions so that we can operate more in the idea realm and compete versus ideas and not necessarily worry about people deceiving us, because we're able to store value so securely, I guess. That's something that made me think of.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I guess having those, let's, you use the term assumptions or constants or absolutes, I think that's what they're about. They're about freeing us and, you know, facilitating our better cooperation and freeing us to engage in, you know, the better, more productive expressions of what we want to produce and create in the world. And so, you know, I know it's maybe it wasn't worded too well, but just things like, let's say the right to property, right? So Bitcoin instantiates that, and that's great, especially in a world where that right is by no means afforded to every citizen. And so the fact that Bitcoin does that without requiring permission is amazing. And I think that there's a lot of great effects of that. But I think while we still exist in a world where Bitcoin does a lot, but it doesn't do everything, it doesn't cover all the bases for all the different ways in which we want to interact and cooperate and coordinate, I think agreeing on these assumptions, agreeing on these constants or absolutes will help facilitate, you know, smoother interaction between all of us. That's kind of what I was meaning, you know, when I was trying to articulate that. And something like the assumption that your property is yours, it's not mine, and I don't have any right to it unless we both agree to voluntarily exchange. I think that's one of them. And that's why I think a lot of Bitcoiners start looking at ideas like that. And I don't really care what school of philosophy or political ideology they fall within. Like, that's not very important to me. It's the assumptions or the philosophy themselves that I'm interested in. But I think seeing the way that an absolute, an assumption, a constant like Bitcoin coordinates all the things that it does and does so well, I just think it kind of tunes our perspective or our mind to look for other assumptions or constants or absolutes that might have a similarly beneficial coordinating effect on how they both, you know, preserve the rights and freedoms of the individual, but simultaneously allow for the type of exchange and cooperation that we want to foster. And so I think just the fact of seeing that in Bitcoin is starting to get people to look at other potential instantiations of that. I got two more, and then we can, you know, if we have time, we can open it up to further discussion. But one that I think is you know, impossible to deny, really, is I think a lot of Bitcoiners and people in this space, as time goes on, as they become more comfortable with interacting with this thing, as they become, have had a better grasp on what it actually allows for, what that optionality that Bitcoin represents and how to employ it and leverage it in one's own life, I think it, and the chaos that's swirling around us in terms of the world today, I think it imbues a sense of ascendancy. And I don't mean that in an arrogant sense, but I think we all look at this tool, we look at the world, we look at ourselves, and I think we say, it's our time now. It's my time now. This, if there was ever a reason for me to, you know, refine myself, to stop engaging in the bullshit about myself, to start really committing myself to the person I want to be and the world I want to build, the time is now that this tool exists. And, you know, it's by no means a foregone conclusion. So there's also, you know, there's a pull in that regard that, you know, like if you really see the good, the potential for good that this thing has, you know, both as for you as an individual and for, you know, collective humanity, don't wait, you know, like give yourself to it, lean into it, and all the, you know, in whatever way, angle, capacity, that you want to, that most suits you, that most speaks to you. But I feel like in general, and again, I don't think this is disputable if you spend any time on Bitcoin Twitter, but I think there's a general sense of like, you know, it's time for good to have its day, and I want to be a part of that. And so that sense of ascendancy where we're all trying to become as fit as possible to play that role of that kind of hero's journey of rising to the challenge of, you know, rising to that great moment. And so the reason why that's relevant in the context of this discussion about Bitcoin and behavior change is because I think if you accept that, like, that's the trajectory, the time is now, I need to step up, it's that big moment, it's do or die sort of thing, I think that's going to draw out of you or inspire or motivate you to make yourself more fit for that journey, for that challenge, for that battle. And so again, this can be manifested in many different ways: how you treat your body, your health, your fitness, you know, the circumstances in which you live your life and your home, and how you manage your finances, and how you accumulate information, how you express yourself out in the world, who you communicate with, who you interact with, all of these things. And that's, you know, that's why I think it's relevant here, because that general sense that I get from a lot of the people I speak to, I think is huge in inspiring them to make the changes, to be ready for something like that, and to lean into it as much as possible. So I think that sense of ascendancy is a big piece of why Bitcoin is so transformative right now.
I feel like I'm ascending into the cosmos with you, John. Right now.
Well, that's why we're here, for the cosmic deep dive, right?
100%. Anyone? I know Filter, you had a hand raised. You're welcome to jump in or Zen.
Yeah, I'd like to add a bit more to the conversation around the constants, right? So I like to look at things from the psychological perspective a lot, right? So one thing that I think Bitcoin does is it constants your identity of what you refer to yourself when you say as I, right? Because all your belief structures and all your framework of understanding is believed around your understanding of who am I, right? Who am I? Of your understanding of yourself. So once you get the game that we are playing, right now nobody has a clue, right? The most of the society doesn't understand that we are just looking at the evolutionary perspective, right? So through all the organisms, the game is of survival, right? But we have already won that. We have conquered this planet. right? And we have already won the game of survival. We are thriving in a sense, right? But doing better than the other species. But the game right now we are playing, which actually did allow us to ascend from the surviving game, was trading with each other and leveraging leveraging each other's, right, through money, right? So once that game is shifted and onto a fair game, right, and everybody can understand, right, okay, this game is about creating a better a life for each other by creating value, something that is of value, right? So once that understanding is clear, the person then is incentivized into looking at his own belief structures, his own framework of looking at things, because whatever now he sees wrong with the world is rather with his own understanding, because there is something that you are missing. And that is the direction of thought that I'm having. And I know it's getting really cosmic, but it's more about, yeah, once the game is clear, because most of my friends and the people I know, all they are doing is trying to earn money. It's not about that. It's not about that. It was never about money. It was about creating better lives for each other by leveraging each other, right? And the money is just a tool in that. So once that game becomes free, we are already in abundance. We have that tech that we can create a 1,000 times better life for each other in the next 2 or 3 years if we just switch on to the Bitcoin monetary tool, right? So in that game, once that change is done, the person, the kids who are being brought up in that environment, they would be looking at the game as not of being surviving, because everybody would be having enough food and shelter, and all the tech around us would be making us really abundant. So the first thing would be, okay, I need to just get a clear understanding of, okay, I need to create value for each other, and that helps in the internal reflection of the anxiety and the peace that we can feel. I went on a little bit more. Yeah.
No, I agree, and I think that's in line with, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've been saying. And once people's genuine will can be expressed, I think when the parasite comes off of the productive capacity and the desire for the pristine expression of will of humanity, once that parasite is removed, i.e. the money, the people that co-opt the money, I think you're right. I think we will get one abundance, and I think things will shift quite quickly because people's demands will be more reflected in the market, and there won't be a suppressant, and there won't be someone else dictating what the incentives of the market should be, because they've collected undue influence in that market unfairly. And then, you know, I think if I was hearing you correctly, I think it is going to shift to people changing internally about, like we were describing before, what are the things that are most important to them, let's say, you know, like when people aren't in a state of poverty, and when they're not on the hamster wheel and they're not always chasing the carrot, then there is a certain degree of safety and security in their foundation and the things that are provided for them. I think that's kind of the starting block of allowing people the mental freedom and perhaps other forms of freedom to explore these different elements of themselves that are very important in my estimation to develop and to explore, but took a back seat to more pressing concerns of survival in a world where they were forced into a situation of lack, basically of depravity, poverty, because of the imbalance that the system created and the unfairness that it allowed for. And so I agree, we have a fair system. People are able to contextualize, you know, the things that are important and valuable to them better. And I think we get, you know, better people, happier people. And I think we get markets and society that is more abundant, more wealthy, more healthy, and, you know, all the good stuff that we've been talking about. So if I understand you correctly, I think I agree.
Yeah, you got me. Yeah.
We've got Filter raising his hand. Feel free to jump in, Filter.
Hey, thanks. So a couple of things you guys are making me think of, and these are sort of thoughts that have kind of been kicking around in my head. I feel like we're kind of living right now, and maybe we've always been this way, but especially right now, we're living in a trust vacuum. There's so much going on with COVID. People are having trouble trusting government. There's all this fake news going on. And this is something that's always happened. You know, there's always been propaganda and so on. But I think about the redistribution of people into communities that are sort of more online and less in person with what we're going through now. And I feel like it's a good thought exercise for, you know, humanity moving out into the stars. And, you know, this is maybe getting esoteric again. You know, maybe we'll never get there. But if we were, and the more we sort of lead these separate lives, these online lives, and you think about Neuralink and how Neuralink will change how we view the world, it changes, I think, the model of trust. I think trust itself is going to change in a big way because our communication is becoming more digital. And so, you know, you think about things like deep fakes. I don't know that my kids or my grandkids are going to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's not without a trust network. And I think, you know, as you move out to greater and greater magnitudes of physical separation, you know, that trust vacuum gets bigger and bigger. And really the thing that I think I'm hammering on here is this solution to the Byzantine generals problem. Like, that is hugely valuable when you think about the evolution of man over a long period of time over a great distance. So yeah, it's just some thoughts kicking around in my head.
Can you just summarize what the Byzantine generals problem is for a couple of noobs potentially on the chat?
Yeah, so I'm probably not going to be able to do it justice. I'm not a mathematician. And, you know, I have a sort of basic understanding of computer science. But my understanding of the Byzantine generals problem is you've got different actors. And so on a battlefield, for example, and you're sending messages between the different parties. Okay, when to deploy the troops, you know, where to move people, when to fight, when to retreat, all that kind of stuff. How do you know the message that you're getting is really coming from the person you think it's coming from? That's my understanding of it. And so I think that whole class of problem suddenly becomes really, really relevant when everything in our world gets digitized. I hope I did it justice.
You know, the issue about trust in the future is definitely an interest, you know, is an important one. And I think the degree to which Bitcoin has changed the nature of trust, at least insofar as we use it to coordinate, interact with one another, is definitely profound and is going to facilitate a lot of useful coordination that we may not have otherwise been able to establish. But when you were saying about the deep fakes and, you know, will we know what is reality in the future? And I'm sure AI and virtual reality and all this stuff will play a big, my camera goes blurry a little bit sometimes. Sorry about that. Will play a big role in the future that we and our children grow up in. And that, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. I have excitement and concern for those technological developments, like I'm sure everybody. But the thing I keep coming back to, and this goes back to the conversation we were having about a pristine money system reflecting the collective will or consciousness of all the participants that engage in it. And the caveat here is with AI, sure, things can get way out of control and there's no way of predicting that stuff. But that being said, I feel like once we, all of our collective will is on the same money system, and that money system cannot be corrupted. It's pristine. It's a genuine reflection of our values and our intent and our demand, then I feel like problems are way more naturally resolved than we're used to them being today. you know, because we grow up in this kind of cave of centralized authority and decision making. And even though, you know, there are obviously free markets today, you know, the buck stops at the money, and the people that control the money have a massive influence on, and the money we are forced to use has a massive influence on all this stuff. And I think once all of our collective will is contained within that pristine money system, I feel like problems won't emerge as much, because, you know, the despair, like, they'll be reflecting the things that we want it to reflect and intend for it to reflect. And notwithstanding, certainly things can emerge from our collective will that, when, you know, they're given an emergent property through all of our behavior, you know, I think this is what I'm trying to say. Sorry for the poor articulation, but I think what I'm trying to say is that what emerges will be a reflection of our, you know, the good elements of ourselves and the bad elements of ourselves. And so I feel like we're going to have more control over their remedying or their fixing in the future when it's such a direct relationship like that, because it's not like that now. There's other enormous forces that seek to be a man in the middle between our will and what we see as a problem and how we intend to rectify or remedy that. And I think when even if the emergent manifestation or what manifests as a result of all of our emergent behavior on this fair money system, even if it's a reflection of some of the negative elements within us, you know, fill in the blank, I think the fix will be recognizing it and then changing those elements within ourselves. And I think the pathway to that fix is a lot more open, or there's a lot less friction in it, because we have such a direct relationship with the money and how it represents a pristine reflection of our will. And because the same process is technically true now, but there's just so much noise in between that we can't be sure that if we notice a problem, one, if it's truly representative of something, you know, a deficiency within us that we need to correct, nor can we as easily just change our behavior and have that, you know, have that represent or act as a solution by being represented through our action and will, because there's so much noise, there's middleman, there's so much friction kind of on that line of communication, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I love, just to kind of sum up what I hear you saying, is it's a unobstructive problem solving on an individual level spread across the world. And that's able to kind of propel us into a realm where problems that we face at a collective level are able to be solved much more efficiently. And thus individuals are able to flourish and thrive by themselves and benefit from that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I think there'll be a better appreciation in the future on this type of money system, that the problems we experience are more more of our own making. Like today, you see a problem in the world and you say, well, I'm not going to do anything about it because it's just little old me and I had nothing to do with it in the first place. Now, like, again, I still don't think that's the right approach, because our behavior does make a difference when it's multiplied by 8 billion, you know? So I think we should be acting as though our actions have consequences, but they're not. People that take that attitude are not entirely wrong, because there is this massive force in between their will and what emerges out in the world that's distorting that. And that is the unfairness of the distribution flows and controls and creation of the money and the effects that that has. But I think when that friction, that noise is no longer there, and people's, you know, will is genuinely reflected as an, you know, as an emergent manifestation in the world, I think, one, people will have a greater sense that their behavior and their actions actually do matter, and that will inspire some influence over their behavior. And then when they encounter issues out in the world, I think they'll feel more empowered and a greater sense of responsibility to say, you know, I need to be the one to change my behavior to fix that, because that's how that problem emerged, is the behavior of me and people like me. And so I see a more direct relationship to the solving of problems in the future through our own behavior, and a greater appreciation for that process.
Excellent, John. Dude, that was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. We are at 2 hours here. I'd love to, you know, just open it up to you if you have any final thoughts and things you'd like to share with the attendees about kind of what you're up to, and, you know, anything else you'd like to add to close this out.
Sure. The last thought, and it's the last thing that I had on my list, but you know, Bitcoin, for all the reasons we've discussed, and I'm sure many more that each of you have recognized in your own life, has become something that's deeply meaningful to us. And I think when we talk about, again, in the context of behavior change and why we're noticing these changes across the board, it's because meaning is, you know, is the thing that sustains you against, you know, the backdrop of the challenges and the pressures and the hardship of life. And I think this is often why the concept of meaning and engaging in things that are meaningful become the road to salvation, almost, because it makes the journey justified. That if you're moving towards, if you're engaged in something that's meaningful, and if the thing that you're trying to achieve has such a degree of meaning for you, then it justifies and validates and allows you to sustain and persist through all the ups and downs on the journey of getting to that place. And, you know, that's a, when we talk about some of the more powerful elements of this, and you know, I know the word salvation has a lot of perhaps religious baggage, and maybe in this case it's justified. I'm not intending to invoke, you know, traditional religious ideas into this conversation, but I think that we all struggle in life. We struggle to determine how to live our lives, what we should be prioritizing, who we should be engaging with, what is worthy of the sacrifice of our time, and what also, you know, what sanctifies our act of just existing. And I think the answer to all those questions is developing great meaning in your life. And obviously it comes in many different ways: family, children, your own health and vitality. So we look for meaning in many domains. And the fact is that Bitcoin, for all the things that it does now and all the things we hope it to do and produce in the future, generates a great deal of meaning in people. And it's that meaning, or at least that meaning that contributes to all the other meaning that we find in our lives, is what actually makes life worth living, makes the struggle worthwhile, makes the challenges that we both confront by happenstance and we confront by our own making, you know, something that we invite, because we want to keep pushing that forward and engaging that meaning and going toward what we believe it can be, what we believe it can be. And that, in my mind, is, you know, the idea of salvation or liberation, that you've constructed a life imbued with so much meaning that you've actually wound up making it worthwhile. And especially in an era where there's so much despair and there's so much hopelessness, and even in the best of times, you know, we all have ups and downs and we struggle with these ideas, that is a part of the dynamic that's at play here, is nothing short of amazing. And so to finish it off, I just want to say, I'm so grateful to, you know, be able to have the opportunity to talk to you guys here today, be a part of an event like this, to talk to all the amazing Bitcoiners that I get to speak to, you know, on my podcast and on Twitter, and just be a part of this thing. I mean, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm just trying to look at this and observe my own behavior, observe the behavior of the people that I'm interacting with, and ask questions and say, there's something extremely special and unique going on here. I'd sure like to understand it more. I'm so happy to be able to engage with it. And, you know, what was once a hopelessness for, I guess, humanity has been turned into an extreme sense of excitement and enthusiasm and hopefulness. And I just can't wait to keep doing this and keep seeing how things develop and interacting with all you guys again. So thanks for hanging out with me for a while.
All right, you guys, thanks so much for listening to that. I hope you enjoyed it. And thanks again to John for coming on the event and sharing with us. That was a phenomenal seminar. I really enjoyed it. I think it'll go down in history as one of the greater momentous events. At least that's the way I see it. Be sure to go and subscribe to John's podcast, Bitcoin Rapid Fire, and follow him on Twitter at John Vallis, at John K. Vallis. If you'd like to check out any more of our events coming up, be sure to go to thebitcoinpath.com. And until next time, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual.